And then today, Father's Day, the head of the home, or as I wanted to call it, the home and its champion. The home and its champion. Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 25 says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband." The champion of the home. Happy Father's Day. I always thought, or at least after I became a father, Brother Ed, I just didn't think one day was enough. Maybe it should be Father's Week, you know, or Father's Month, or Father's Quarterly. But it's just one day. Somebody said, "Do you think Father's Day is as important as Mother's Day?" Well, I don't really see how you could have one without the other. But I know Mother's Day it's sort of on a scale of grandeur. It's just Mother's Day, you just can't compete with Mother's Day, can you? And nor should you, really. I mean, really, men, we really don't want Father's Day to be as glorious as Mother's Day. Some of you do. Some of you are not sure about that. You think, hey, what's the deal here? I wish you all a happy Father's Day. I want to close the series. I'll be preaching tonight on the home also, but I want to close the series looking at the home and its champion. In a real sense, this message could come first in the series. Because in God's plan, and you really can't understand the relationship between husband and wife, between parent and child, unless you understand God's pattern for leadership. A lot of the controversy and the conflict and the confusion about, well, do I have to do what he says? Or, well, if I do what she wants, well, I won't be happy, and we won't. How can both of us be happy? And a lot of the confusion and the controversy comes because we fail to see God has a design for order. You can see that, surely, in the institution of government. God gave government, not a specific government plan per se, although I believe he does bless different people in different nations at different times with government. I personally think that representative democracy is the best form of government in the world. I believe it's the best form of government in history outside of the theocracy of Israel. And to be real honest with you, Israel didn't handle that well themselves. The theocracy was perfect. God's rule was perfect. But Israel... they were disobedient many times. But for our day and time, for our age, I'm convinced that representative democracy is the best form of government in the world. We get just about what we, I don't want to say pay for, but we get just about what we deserve in our government. Or perhaps we get just about what we need. God's providence and God's appointment. And in government, there must be order. There must be a chain of command. There must be discipline. We all have rights, of course, but we all have responsibilities. You can't do anything you want. It has to be weighted and balanced with what others need and what others want. And so you have to have rules. Rules are good, actually, if they come from the right heart and they're promoted for the right reason. So we understand the chain of command in government. We sometimes chafe under it and we sometimes resist it. I was driving through the city, Cincinnati, the other day, and I have a very bad habit with my seatbelt. That is, I forget to put my seatbelt on. And you're not going to believe this. Well, you might believe this. I'm standing up here on the pulpit and all that. In Tennessee, ministers were exempt from the seatbelt law. True story. I lobbied hard for that. No, there was a section in their law that people that, I don't know, delivery people and people that jumped in and out of vehicles a lot, somehow they got exempted by special designation. So I didn't have to wear a seatbelt. I mean, you know, 14 years is a long time. I don't really like seatbelts, to be honest with you. But teenagers wear seatbelts. My 6-year-old boy is more conscientious than I am. He's very conscientious. He gets in the car, he puts that seatbelt on. I'm really proud of it. I don't always do that. And I forget where I was going. I'm going to the nursing home or somewhere, the hospital. And I go across the viaduct there, and there right in my, I mean, in the backseat of my car is this Cincinnati police cruiser. He is after me, but not really. I guess he just wanted to be where I was. But my first thought was, I don't have my seatbelt on. I knew I wasn't speeding. I was pretty sure I wasn't speeding. I got a ticket one time for failure to yield. And after I discussed it with the officer, I was merging on the interstate one time, and I had a policeman pull me over, and he gave me a ticket for failure to yield. I thought to myself, that's always how I merge. I just get with the flow of traffic. But anyway, I'm digressing here. I'm just saying, I thought, well, I don't know if I cut somebody off or, because when it's time to merge, I merge. I don't stop on the on-ramp. Please don't stop on the on-ramp. I'm not planning on you stopping on the on-ramp. Just merge. Just find you a place and get in. I try to help people merge. I try to be, I move to the center lane if I can, and I try to slow down if I see people coming merging, don't you? Wake up when you're driving, please, because people need to merge, but don't stop on the on-ramp. We're not expecting that. I thought, did I do that? And we drove on a little way, and my heart rate goes up a little bit. I thought, I'm waiting for the lights to come on. I've already convicted myself because I don't have my seatbelt on. But we went different ways. We got on the interstate, and he went on, and I pulled my seatbelt on. I thought, but you know, one of my first reactions, before I'm thinking, this is all in my mind here, I'm thinking, well, that's a dumb rule. See, if he pulls me over for seatbelts, that's not, I can't believe he's going to pull me over for the seatbelt. I'm a busy person. I just kind of irritated me, see? And he didn't pull me over. I guess the Lord rebuked me without having to pull me over. I thought, well, I don't want to do that. You see, we chafe under rules, even governmental rules. In the church, God has a chain of command. Christ is the head of the church. The Holy Spirit is the administrator, yes, but there is given to the church the pastor, the under-shepherd. You understand that? We understand that. Baptists understand that. That's God's order. In the home, God has order and design as well. He has the head of the home, who's the man. He has the heart of the home, that's the woman. The parents are to tell the children what to do, and not vice versa. Now, the children are to honor their parents, and the parents are to do what's best. I mean, what's really best? What's really best for the children? But there's a chain of command, God's order, God's design. And really, as I said, this message could be first. Because the man, the husband, the father is to be the head of the home. He has a greater responsibility. He has a greater accountability for the home. Please understand me. I know there are single parent homes. I'm well aware of that. I know there are homes where moms are carrying a double load. I know there are homes where dads alone are carrying the load. Especially spiritually, that can be true. Even if the spouse is there, maybe one of them's lost or one of them's backslidden. Sometimes a husband or a wife is carrying the load alone. I know there are grandparents who have been entrusted with the rearing of their own grandchildren. I know how complicated life can be, and I thank God that there are people who step in and fill the gaps and meet the needs. But God's perfect design, God's order, even before the fall, was to have the man to be the head of the home, to be the leader. Every institution God designs has a leader. In the home, it's the man. Now, if through death or some other difficulty, the man's place is empty, then the wife and the mother carries a great and heavy load. Grandfather should help if he can, and brother should help, and others can help. The church can help some. And I'm not criticizing your home if difficulty or some problem has caused the pattern to be broken, but I'm talking today about the pattern. When a man is the champion of his home. Number one, I believe a man should live a pattern of sacrificial love before his wife and his children. Before he attempts to lead them anywhere, before he attempts to direct them and guide them and shepherd them along, I believe a godly man needs to exhibit a pattern of sacrificial love. Don't leap ahead to this discussion about headship and leadership until you get this clear, men, about the kind of leadership that you're going to have. It has to be a leadership that's sacrificially loving the people you want to lead. Otherwise, you're not really qualified. Oh, technically, I mean legalistically, But spiritually and effectively, you can't really lead people in the way I'm going to talk about in the home. You can't lead them unless you're already prepared to love them sacrificially. That means to put their interest above your own, their welfare above your own, their benefit, their opportunities, their happiness, if you want to use that word. If there's ever time to bring in the happiness code, here it is. It's the man who says, I want my family's interest to come first. Now, I know some men who say that, but they leave a great gap in there and they don't put their family's spiritual interest first. They put their family's material or financial interest ahead and they sacrifice so their family will have a nice home or nice clothes or the things they want and need perhaps. And by the way, the Bible does teach that a man should do that. One of the sorry things about America is that there are so many absentee fathers and lazy men who will not support the children they father. They ought to get after them like ugly on an ape. I mean, they ought to get after that crowd. Why? Because I don't want to help pay for the welfare. No, because those sorry fellas ought to be held accountable. They ought to be held accountable. You want to know why homes and communities are being devastated in our culture? It's because of absentee men. Men who only know how to be biological fathers. That's the pitiful truth. they ought to be held accountable. I think it's wrong to have a double standard where an illegitimate pregnancy is all falling with its weight on the woman. That's not right. It takes a man to father a child. And I mean nowadays with DNA testing, you don't have to wonder who the father is. I think these men need to be tracked down and held accountable. I think they ought to know there's some responsibilities. I mean, child neglect and neglect of the home ought to be a criminal thing. It is a criminal. It is a criminal act. Children that go hungry without clothes or don't know where they're going to spend the night from day to day. My first question is, where's the dad? Where is the dad? Now, I mean, if he's dead, if he's, I'm going to excuse him if he's dead. But if he's not, then what is he doing to put a roof over those children's head and clothes on their back? That's what a dad ought to do. But I'm saying, I've seen men who meet that need. They put clothes on their back and the roof over their head and food on their table, but they don't meet their children and their wives' spiritual needs. And I believe spiritual needs are more important than physical needs. Do I think it's important to eat? Are you kidding? Of course it's important to eat. Do I think it's important to have a roof over your head? Absolutely. Do I think it's important to have clothes to wear? I'm all for wearing clothes. I'm 100% for wearing clothes, and more of it most of the time. I'm for wearing clothes. But I'll tell you what, spiritual needs are more important than all those things. But before you can lead your family, before you can lead your wife, before you can lead your children, you have to develop a pattern. I don't just mean words, but you have to have a pattern of sacrificially loving your wife and your children. You have to impress upon them day after day, step after step, I love you at least as much as I love myself, and I would like to love you, wife and children, more than I love myself, and I'm going to put you first. I'm going to put your emotional needs first. I'm going to put your physical needs first. I'm going to put your financial needs first. I'm going to put your spiritual needs first. Family, I'm going to put you ahead of myself. If you don't get that picture, you'll never get the biblical picture of male leadership in the home. You'll get this tyrannical, despotic picture of some guy sitting on a throne somewhere saying, all right, now bring me my slippers. All right, now bring me my supper. All right, now do this. All right, mow the yard again. Oh, blah, 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 blah. It's okay to help your dad mow the yard, though, teenager. But I didn't mean to say that. Just slipped out. Before you get the picture of the Bible's dad, the role of the dad that you see in the Bible, you have to get this pattern of sacrificial love. Do your children think that you would and have and do put their interest ahead of your own? I'm not sure children can really understand this. Not when they're little. Of course, they're not going to have a clue. Only after you're grown and have your own family do I think you begin to realize some of the sacrifices your parents made. Would you agree about that? I never knew when I was growing up what my parents did without so I could have things that I thought I needed. You'd be surprised how much you think you need when you're a kid. I was a kid once. Boy, I needed lots of stuff. I needed to go and do and have. And I never realized at the time what my parents, what my daddy sacrificed. I used to come in from school. My daddy would already be home. And he'd be sitting in his recliner. And if he was sitting in his recliner, he'd be asleep. I used to think, what a waste of time. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I thought that was, I mean, when I was a kid, I hated taking naps. I thought, naps, what a waste of daylight. You could be outside playing baseball, or something. I hated taking naps when I was a kid. It's okay to take them now, though, by the way. But I hated taking. I thought, what a waste of time. I didn't realize, it didn't register with me that he got up at 4:30 in the morning. He never woke me up. I can't ever remember. Well, that's a real art, getting it up and not waking anybody else up in the house. I don't know, I guess he did. I slept all through that. I don't remember him. I don't remember hearing the garage door, the car start up. I was dead to the world at 5 o'clock in the morning. But he'd already put in sometimes 10, 11 hours of work before he ever came home. I can't say I appreciated that or understood that. I can't say I really understood what he sacrificed to give me what I want and what I needed. You see, if you're going to lead your family, first you're going to have to prove to them that you sacrificially love them. That's the pattern of sacrificial love. That's how you lead. That's how you lead as the head of the home. Number two, dads have to be committed to the protection of spiritual life in the home. If I were to identify the greatest weakness in most Christian homes, and certainly this would be true of homes where there's not Christ-centeredness, where there is no faith, it would be doubly true there. The dad is primarily responsible for the protection of spiritual life in the home. You think, well, I think the mother should be the one who teaches the children and reads Bible stories to them and tells them about Jesus. Well, of course she should do that. Why would she not do that? But what I said was not the promotion of spiritual life, although I could use that word. I said the protection of spiritual life. For example, I believe the husband is the primary defender of the sanctity of marriage. It is his responsibility to keep himself pure and faithful to his marriage vows, and it's also his responsibility to protect his wife from any kind of temptation, to protect his wife. You say, you talk about jealousy? No, I'm talking about common sense, protecting your wife from the temptation of a sexual sin. And I believe the husband should be the primary defender of the sanctity of the marriage vows. Men, you should take that as seriously as you take the protection of your family's physical well-being. The Bible says a man ought to make a covenant with his eyes not to look on the wrong kind of things. We ought not to allow into our mind or into our heart things that will undermine our marriage vows. I believe that's a cornerstone of spiritual life in a Christian home. I'm told that divorce rates among Christians today is reaching the scale of the general population. Now, what they mean to say by that is being a Christian nominally is having less and less effect on how faithful people are to their marriage vows. I know there are scriptural grounds for divorce. I know there are reasons. Even Jesus gave some reasons. That's not my message. But I'm saying divorce among Christians is reaching the same kind of proportions that it does in the general community. That ought not to be. And I am convinced that in most cases, it is the man who fails first. I didn't say all cases. So I don't have anybody jumping on me after church, because you can make your case the exemption. Only you and God really know. But I believe in most cases, it is the husband who fails to protect the sanctity of the marriage vows. Emotionally, and then ultimately, physically. It is the man's responsibility to protect spiritual life. That's true of the marriage vows. That's true of spiritual life. I believe it's the dad's responsibility to make sure everybody gets up and goes to church on Sunday morning. You ought not to lie in bed and wait and follow and see where anybody goes or if they go. Or you ought to get up. You ought to get up, Dad. This is what you ought to do. You ought to get up and make it as easy as possible for everybody to get to church. Yes, you should. I believe the dad ought to go around and make sure everybody's up. Right. That means you got to be up too. But I believe the dad ought to be the one. The dad ought to be the one on Saturday night. Get this. You have to start getting ready for Sunday morning on Saturday. The dad ought to be the one who goes around and says, everybody got something to wear in the morning? I learned that a long time ago. So I have three daughters. One of them's married now, and Philip's responsibility. But I've got a son, too. I don't have to tell my teenage girls anymore to get something to wear. They're big enough to do that. They do that. But I have to do it with Aaron. I have to get him ready. I have to start Saturday night saying, what are we going to wear tomorrow? Because he's a little finicky. Yesterday we were going to a wedding, a family affair there, and he's going with us because Lisa and Laura are away at the canoe trip, and so there's no babysitter. We're taking him with us. And he comes in, and he's got a tank top type little shirt on, and some kind of khaki short pants and some old gym shoes. He says, is this all right? I didn't have to ask his mom. I got a brain. I'm thinking, no, that's not quite appropriate. That's not quite appropriate for a wedding. But, you know, he went back in and got his long pants and got him a shirt, and he put a tie on. I didn't tell him he had to wear a tie, but he put a tie on. But you got to plan ahead with that boy. You got to start thinking the day before what kind of socks he's going to wear and what kind of shoes you're going to have him wear, because you don't just sneak up on him. You sort of have to have him headed in the right direction and kind of jump out there in front of him, and then you can lead him. I believe that's the dad's job. I don't believe that's my wife's job to get up on Sunday morning and urge him to get out of bed and get dressed. That's my job. I'm the boss there. I tell people when to get up. I tell people when we're leaving. I tell people when the bus goes. Now you think, well, can't mom do that? Of course they can. And if you want to do it that way in your house, that's fine. But the first time somebody backtalks your wife, says, I don't want to get up, or the first time they don't want to go to church, that's the dad's job. That's the dad's job to encourage. Protection of spiritual life. I'll tell you what. Men, don't let your children backtalk your wife. Don't let that happen. Don't sit on the sidelines and let your children rebuke your wife. I think that's one of the most damnable things you can do to the spiritual life of your home. I know it doesn't help your wife. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't help your children either. And I have never permitted my children to talk back to their mother. I don't allow it. I don't like it. It's not right. It's not right. She never asked them to do anything that I haven't asked them to do. But the dad's responsible for the protection of spiritual life in the home. Boy, I can't tell you. I love to see people go to church. But I love to see families go to church. Now, if your family can't come, you come. If your husband won't come, you come. If your wife won't come, you come. If your parents won't come, you come. If your kids won't come, you come. You just get here. I mean, get here if you can. But I love to see a mom and a dad and their children come to church. I just think that's the way God wants it to be. You got a family, that's the way it ought to be. And I believe the dad is the number one line of defense. He is the protector of the spiritual life in the home. And if there are going to be Christian values in the home, there are going to be Christian principles in the home, there are going to be Christian dress in the home, it's the dad's responsibility to see that that's the way the home goes. It's the dad's responsibility to teach the children and to lead his wife in giving financially to the welfare of the church. It's the dad's responsibility to set that example, the protection of spiritual life. It's the dad's example to call on people to pray and to have his children hear him pray and to protect the spiritual life in the home. You realize when our homes falter, when our homes fail, most of the time, I didn't say all, but most of the time, it's the father who's lost interest or lost his commitment or lost his way in leading that home. Most of the time. I know there are exceptions. I'm sure there are exceptions. Maybe they come leaping to your mind. You say, oh, I know a case. Or I had a case, or here's the case. I understand that. I understand that happens. And yes, I have seen it in the way you may be describing. But I'm saying most of the time, when children don't go to church, and when the family doesn't serve God, and spiritual life is dying in the home, and spiritual values are falling to the ground, most of the time, it's the man who's fallen. He's not leading. Do you have to be an eloquent spokesperson and articulate? No, I don't think dads have to be particularly articulate. Or some of the best lessons my daddy ever taught me, he never said a word. He found other ways to express himself. I can remember sitting in church when I was about 8 years old. I couldn't wait till I was big enough to sit somewhere else than with my family. Because they'd bring us in and they would sit us there, right there. I'd get as far away from my dad as I could. Because he'd tend to reach around my mother and pat me on the back of the head. So I figured out early, I need to be out of arm's length, lest the suspicion would fall across his mind and he would be tempted to do that to me and I wouldn't be doing anything. So I'd get as far as, but you know what he'd do then? He would lean forward in the pew a little bit. He'd reach out his left hand and he'd snap his finger. When he snapped his finger, I had to look. Because if I didn't look when he snapped his finger, I knew he'd be coming down the road pretty quick. So I learned right away, if he snapped his finger, I should look that way. You know what? He didn't say a word. He didn't say a word. He'd just look at me. And though I wasn't doing anything, well, maybe sometimes. Sometimes I'd be goofing off. You know, sometimes I'd be losing my focus. Sometimes I don't know. I think it was my sister or my brother. I don't know what they were doing to me. But sometimes I'd be losing track, and he'd just look at me. And he might just do like this. Just shake his head ever so slightly. You know what? I never said, what? What? What do you, what do you want? I never asked. I'm not that dumb. I just sort of nod my head like, And I'd get real still for a little while. I'd get real focused for a little while. He never said anything. So, Dad, you don't have to be eloquent and articulate. You don't have to be a man of many words. You just have to know how to look at people and how to handle people. And you don't need a lot of words for that. But you've got to protect the spiritual life in your home. Finally, men, husbands, fathers, you need to be a picture of scriptural leadership in the home. It isn't for naught that God has chosen the image of Father for his own relationship to his family. He chose the picture, the word, Father. May not be politically correct, but that's the way the Bible describes God. That's the way we ought to describe God. I have no respect for these people going around trying to change the gender identity in the Bible. What those people want with the Bible baffles me. I just can't fathom it. I don't think we ought to call God some other gender than Father. It's the language the Bible uses. You say, well, I wonder why that is that way. Well, it's that way because God said it that way. What brainiac you've been talking to? I mean, this is what God said. Don't you think we ought to just stick with what God said? We'll figure it out in eternity, right? We'll understand it better by and by if you've got some questions, but just stick with God's way. And so the Father's relationship to the home is very crucial because it is a picture of scriptural leadership. God chose the term Father to describe His relationship to His family. And so, as a father, you have a pivotal, crucial role because you are a reflector of what people think of when they think of a father. Sometimes people have been hindered spiritually because their father has failed in some crucial and sometimes a great way, and they have trouble understanding the fatherhood of God in a positive way. I believe that can be overcome, and I've seen it overcome. Sometimes a negative example can, unfortunately, reinforce a positive truth. Sometimes people who haven't had a godly father, they haven't had a godly example in their dad, yet they've been able to appreciate. One man told me one time, he says, I never had a father. He says, I had a biological father. He says, I never had a dad. He says, but I found in Jesus Christ, He's the head of every man. He says, I understand what means the Bible when God's my father. So that can be overcome. But why should your children have to overcome that? Why should your children grow up thinking, Father, what a joke. Father never does anything right. He never does anything for good or God. He never leads. He never loves us sacrificially. He never looked after the spiritual interest of our home. And why should that be a hindrance to their view of God, the Heavenly Father? It ought not to be. When your children think of fatherhood, they ought to think of a pattern of sacrificial love, a protector of spiritual life, and a picture of scriptural leadership. Let's bow our heads. The Father is the champion of the home. He is the champion. I sometimes tease my children. If they're all there and I come in the front door, I kind of want them to gather around and cheer. Dad's home, Dad's home. I know it sounds vain and pompous. I don't say I make them do that. It's sort of a little joke that we have. But I'll tell you this. I want to be the champion of my home. I want to sacrificially love my wife and my children. I hope I have, but if I never have, I want to start today. I want to protect the spiritual life in my home. Do I want my children to learn their ABCs and arithmetic and geography? Oh, absolutely. I want them to learn. But I want them to know Jesus Christ most of all. I want them to know Him and to love Him and serve Him. I wouldn't be happy if they graduated summa cum laude from Harvard if they didn't know God and didn't want to serve God. I want to be a picture of scriptural leadership in the eyes of my children. How about you, Dad? How about you, Father? Father, bless this service. Give us more champions of homes. More men who will be real men, who will put their family's interest ahead of their own, especially so their family's spiritual interest and welfare. Maybe there's some man, some father, some husband today who will rededicate his life and even walking the aisle be an example to his a teenage son or daughter or to his wife, say, I want to be the kind of father, the kind of husband that could be a good picture of Jesus Christ. Jesus loved the church, gave himself for it. I want to love my wife, my family, and give myself for it. I'll ask these things in Jesus' name.